Welcome back to another episode of the Ultra Hope Girls, a Danganronpa podcast. We are psyched because today we are diving into episodes four of both the Future Arc and Despair Arc of the Danganronpa anime, Danganronpa 3. Because that, this episode will spoil.
The Danganronpa 3 anime, fourth episodes.
We hope you enjoy. And without further ado, I'm Maddie.
I'm Marin.
And I'm Caroline.
And we're the Ultra Hope Girls.
Guys.
1, 2.
Welcome to the Danganronpa podcast.
You're on the threshold of an amazing episode. Showtime.
I think it's great. We'll do like harmony that time.
And we're the Ultra Hope Girls.
Ooh, what?
Okay.
That was cute.
I think we all sing.
I don't know.
No, I think it's just me. Let's get started.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton to talk about in these two episodes. I will say I felt like, while interesting things happened, it wasn't necessarily a lot that was hidden information before.
Right. Yeah, because there was an implied sort of relationship with Seiko and then the ultimate blacksmith in Rurika, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I think like that was sort of implied, but we found out more. We found out the origin story. But again, that was more in the second episode of these, not the future arc, the Despair.
I mean, it starts off with Monokuma's recap of what's happening, which I'm pretty sure sometimes skips, like depending on where you start the episode. But it is interesting because he said two things that I found interesting. The first was suspicion is survival. And the second was, please note, Hagakure is outside because no one likes him.
Yes! I had a note about that too. I was like, oh my goodness. Remember, I think it was like episode one or something when I asked the question, I was like, why did they leave Hiro outside? Like, why isn't he in there? And now we have our answer. So
we have the
answer. Nobody likes him. No, we like him. The Ultra Hope Girls stan.
We stan. I kind of liked that little like Monokuma intro. It almost felt like, you know, it was kind of reminiscent of the Monokuma theaters from the games and whatnot. And then one kind of interesting thing that he brought up that caught my attention was that he said, if the time limit runs out and nobody has died, then you win the game. And I don't know if I just missed something or I didn't catch on or something, but like, I did not know that. And then Makoto and Munakata, their like later conversation confirms that the attacker can just end the game whenever they want. I don't know why that's news to me, but I didn't know that, and I was like a little surprised to hear that because I was like, oh, what are the implications of that?
Yeah, that is interesting.
I do think that they said that before when they introduced the rules of the game. I'm pretty sure that's how they said that you could.
Yeah, I might have just missed it.
Yeah, just because like I don't know. Do you remember, or had you remembered any way to end the game, or was it just like go for it, like, you know, try and find the traitor?
I guess I thought that like if you kill the attacker before they kill you and then the attacker's dead.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like I didn't think that it would be like, oh, the attacker can just choose not to kill somebody. But I guess that's kind of smart because like Munakata brings up later, theoretically the attacker could skip around. And everyone could just be like, oh, the attacker's dead. We're good. Yay. Like, you know, and then the attacker, who is theoretically at this point still implied with the remnants of despair, can then infiltrate the future foundation. So I was like, oh, that is a good point. But I do not know why I missed that.
Yeah, I do think that conversation with Munakata, though, is interesting, where he's talking about the strategies. That's definitely a strategy, and it is used in Town of Salem.
Like, yeah.
Mentioned. Oh, yeah, that's high up there. But I don't know. I mean, I think in this conversation with him and right afterwards, I mean, Tengen, Makoto, and even Kyoko, I believe later, all call Munakata like crazy, or they at least imply it at some point. Like, it's like he is absolutely insane. And I'm not saying he's not, because he's saying, let's kill a lot of people and that will help the world. That's mm-hmm. not normal. But it is interesting because I do think that Munakata brings up good points. Like when he says, was Enoshima defeated without sacrifice? And Makoto has no answer. Like he does have some points. And I think that while he is at a very extreme level, and clearly, you know, a lot of what he's saying should be toned down a lot. I don't know. I think that some of what he says gets pushed under the rug kind of quickly.
I kind of agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And he says something about, like, doesn't the deepest despair market themselves as hope? And that is true. That is so accurate. Like, every cult, every rise of a dictator, everything has been a promise for a hopeful future, but it always, always comes at the expense of others, rather than being like leadership that emphasizes all people and without putting others down. Also, I have a note that just says this. It just shows how like much I was like scrambling to find things to talk about. Munakata reminds me of a grown-up Draco Malfoy.
No wonder I like him. Wow.
Woo!
Actually, though, I do have a note, and this is in the Despair arc, episode 4, but it connects to this a lot, I think, and so I guess I feel like maybe I'll just bring it up now. Chisa, in that episode, at one point has a quote. She says, "There is no such thing as a hope that hurts others." And that's kind of like what you were saying, Caroline, about kind of how what markets itself as hope is often at the expense of others when it comes to those kinds of things. But it was interesting to me because my initial reaction to when Chisa says that is that I kind of disagreed, because I thought that, like, you know, I mean, we all have our own hopes and our own goals in our lives, and those goals and hopes are always going to conflict with somebody else's. And that doesn't mean that we have to hurt people necessarily to get what we want. But I mean, any individual person pursuing their own hope, even if their own goals are valid and honorable, at some point they've probably hurt someone in the pursuit of their goals, whether it's just through disappointing someone who wanted something else from them, or having to compete with somebody for the position that they're in. You know, there's always some kind of expense in my opinion, or maybe not always, but often, I think.
That kind of reminds me of La La Land a little bit, and how like the both, you know, creators and artists had their ambitions and dreams and had to sacrifice their romantic relationship, which wasn't necessarily bad or problematic, but it was like it came at the expense of each other, and they chose not each other. They chose their original love.
Yeah, I definitely hear you, Maddie. And I also disagree. I think we've talked a lot about what hope is and what despair is and how there's not necessarily a good or bad to it, depending on how it's used. And it reminds me a lot of when we did our Nagito character analysis, where we talked about how his hope isn't always good, but it is hope. Like, there, I don't know. Right. I definitely hear you on disagreeing with Chisa.
It, relating to that, like Nagito's hope and his luck, it's different than Makoto's, and this is going back to comparing Makoto and Nagito, because it always comes at the expense of others. That was like a literal note I had. And I have, even to take it a step further, that Seiko is almost like the butt of Nagito's luck. She's like the anti-Nagito, and I don't know like what about like what that says about her character, or I don't know, or what they're trying to say about pharmacists. I have no idea, but like I don't know, but yeah, like just as a character, she is the anti-Nagito. She has the worst luck.
I want to talk about Seiko, but that's in the future, so I feel like we should probably go back.
Okay.
Or that's in Despair. I mean, the next thing I have is about Tengen, and just kind of his dramatic character shift in this episode. Yeah, because he goes from being a mentally powerful individual to being an all-around powerful and challenging individual, and he clearly earned his position. I don't think we know if he has an ultimate talent at this point, or if we ever learn that, but you know, he's a pretty fit dude for being probably in his 70s, I would guess, maybe 80s. Yeah, I don't know. I was just shocked when that happened.
I was shocked too. And I had a note about like, oh my gosh, Tengen just beat up the ultimate boxer and like made easy work of it. And then there's a moment later when he's fighting Munakata and he just yeets him through the air. Like he literally just like picks him up and throws him. I'm like, oh my God, like how is this man? Like, wow. So yeah, that's incredible. And he has like the freaking, like, they're not like ninja stars. They're like, there's some, he's shooting something out of his sleeve. Like, I don't know what that is. But I also have, in this episode, it feels like there's just like an explosion of violence And like, I was a little confused at times because like Ruvika, the confectioner girl, she just like has bombs that she's trying to like bomb Seiko with. And then Gekko Gahara pulls out the freaking machine guns on her wheelchair. And like Tengen is like, you know, beating people up. I'm just like, why is everyone prepared for war? Like, I was like, wow, I'm overwhelmed.
Another thing kind of relating to that I noticed about this episode is that this is the first episode that like past dynamics, we don't know what they are, but they are affecting what's going on like very actively in like the violence within each other. And the fact that all of these characters are prepared for war implies that from the beginning, they didn't trust of the others in the room. And I'm curious to see what we find out about all of the character relationships from like the despair arc and how it affects the future arc, because I think that's one of the most interesting parts of the series is how it plays with storytelling in that way.
Yeah, I think it directly relates to the one of the first things Monokuma says in this episode is suspicion is survival. And it's clear that everyone other than probably Makoto and Hina, I would say just those two. I think Kyoko probably does live by suspicion of survival, but like everyone else is living by that mantra of trust no one. And I mean, you guys know in past episodes, I've always said like these people are way too easy to trust. And, you know, like I feel like people sometimes are not the smartest in these games. Like, how could you trust these people so fast? But it's interesting to see how that seems to be hurting them as a group in this scenario. At least so far, because they haven't really made any progress yet on finding out who the traitor is.
Yeah, they have not, but Munakata acknowledges that Makoto is probably not the attacker, which is interesting to me.
I have a note that sort of compares. I mean, so I learned that the voice actress who plays Seiko is the same voice actress who plays Genocide Jack, Aaron Fitzgerald, which is pretty cool. I'm not sure if Aaron Fitzgerald plays Genocide Jack in the anime, but she definitely plays her in the game. So just like, I don't want to like mix that up in case I'm not crediting someone, and I apologize. I don't remember off the top of my head if they're the same. But I think it is really interesting because I think that there are some similarities between Toko and Seiko that like are kind of present. And one of the biggest ones being the fact that Seiko, like in the future arc, like completely transforms into this like monstrous creature. And Toko has like something monstrous living inside her. But the key difference between both of those characters is that Seiko has control over what she becomes and Toko doesn't. And so that I feel like is really interesting because it almost feels like Seiko is like choosing to live a life of like being bitter and lashing out at people who've wronged her rather than Toko, who it's a mental health situation. So her body is just coping with past trauma. I don't know. Just an interesting observation.
Seiko woke up and chose violence.
She woke up and said, I want to murder today.
That's really real though. And we don't know a lot about the relationship between Seiko and Ruruka and Yoi at this point, but we do know that they were childhood friends. They've said that based on the scene that happened in the lab in this episode. It's very strange to me how much Ruruka has over Seiko. Like, all she had to say was, you're my best friend, and that was enough for Seiko to kind of drop everything and act that way. And so it's just, it'll be interesting to see if they go into that more. But that also reminds me of what you were saying with Toko, where, you know, in her backstory, she really just wanted to be appreciated and loved and wanted by someone, by a boy. And in this case, it's Seiko trying to find that through friendship. I don't know. I really like that metaphor.
Thank you.
That's really true. That's super deep.
That juxtaposition.
Mm.
So I have a note, just it's a quick quote from Kyoko that I really like, and it's, preconceptions get in the way of clear thinking. I really loved that. That was so accurate because it can be applied to so many different things, like yeah, great. And I just have a plot note that is, Monika is controlling Gekko Gahara, and Gekko Gahara is a robot robot eye. I wasn't, you know, but yeah, so something going on there.
Yeah, I wondered, like, at that point, I was like, oh my gosh, like, if Gekko Gahara is a robot, like, it made me think that, like, because we kind of see the scene when, is it Sakakura who, like, pushes her chair over and she goes flying onto the floor, and she just kind of lays there motionless. She, like, doesn't seem like she's dead. That wasn't that much force, but she doesn't get up. And so then I was wondering, like, oh my gosh, like, if she's a robot, like, did she just get, like, unplugged from the chair and now she, like, she's, like, unplugged buffering or something?
I feel like it does kind of pose a lot of different questions, because there are a lot of scenarios that could span out from here. Gecko Gahara could be a real person who was hurt, killed, murdered, kidnapped, whatever, by Monica and is missing. Gecko Gahara could have never existed and been a robot, and Monica qualified to be the ultimate, I think that it was the school therapist is what Gecko Gahara is. So Monica could be the school therapist for Hope's Peak, which says a lot.
Wow. You know?
Or it could be a third option where Gecko Gahara has been a robot and was just hacked into by Monica. And so it's a temporary change. And so, I don't know, I kind of like the second option. I think that's the funniest one.
Monica's the school counselor. Yeah. Oh my gosh. You know, fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah.
Doing a good job.
Gecko Gahara, or Monica, has a quote right before you find out that it is Monica, and it's, have a little faith in your soulmate. And she has that quote right before she goes and battles Juzo. And I've seen this anime before, and so when I watched that, I was like, I know that this is Monica. Like, what exactly does that mean, and who is she saying that to? Because right after that, Hina's like, after we get out of here, we're gonna eat a lot of donuts, which means that it's implied that it's to Hina. But I think that it's Monica saying that to Makoto as kind of the ultimate hope, ultimate despair soulmate pairing that was so present back in Ultra Despair Girls. She does consider herself to be the successor to Junko Enoshima at this point. So I don't know, I just thought it was kind of an interesting, like, syntax. So about Rurika, one thing I noticed is that she seems very incapable of taking care of herself. Like, I really don't like her character.
I don't
at
either.
At this point, yeah. She literally, like, when she's hanging out with Yoi, that's literally when they're being chased to the death, and I'm like, when they're hanging
out. When they're vibing.
When they're hanging, Rurika, like, won't run on her own.
Yeah.
Yoi always carries her, and even upstairs. Like, it's very strange to me, and I know that there are rules. Makoto can't run in the hallways, and we don't know what their bands say. And so potentially there's kind of a disconnect there, but at this point, it just seems very lazy. She gives off a very lazy persona to her, and I don't like it very much.
Yeah, and she also, you know, when she tries to get Seiko's help in that like competition thing later on in the Despair arc episode, when they have like their practicals and they have to show off their ultimate ability, she seeks out Seiko's help in trying to, you know, her goal, we find out that her goal did not go according to plan, but her goal was to put a performance enhancing drug in her sweets so that the judges would take and be like, wow, this is amazing, blah, blah, blah. But like, that kind of bothered me too, because like, that if she's winning the competition, or I guess maybe it's not a competition, but if she's passing the practical because of that, like, that was Seiko's work, not hers. And I was just like, yeah, I kind of agree with you. I don't really like her.
And she doesn't even need the help. The judges loved it for the first 2 seconds. And then they had the laxative thing happen.
Right.
I thought it was really funny.
I feel like she is deeply insecure, honestly. I mean, we don't know a lot about her, and I honestly don't remember a lot about her. So that's a benefit to, like, I'm just taking a stab at that. Like, she feels like somebody who isn't confident enough in her abilities, or she has like big time imposter syndrome being at Hope's Peak, and like feels like she needs that to, like, yeah.
The last note I have for this half of the episode is we see Tengen and Munakata fighting, and they fall, and Tengen is impaled on a metal rod and is clearly going to die from those injuries. I don't know. I feel like I can say that it hasn't happened yet, but he is impaled and there is no medical help nearby.
It's like pretty obvious. So,
like, I mean, I don't know. If anyone gets mad at me, the audience, for spoiling that, you can send me a message. The way that Tengen kind of sacrificed himself, I mean, he clearly was not planning to sacrifice himself based on the way he said, like, Lady Luck has favored one of the two of us. Like, it seemed like he was almost just going for it and would take whatever came, but it reminded me a little bit of the Sherlock Holmes ending. I don't know if you guys saw that. I can't remember which specific Sherlock Holmes it is, but when they're like playing chess and then they take each other over the rails. Maddie probably would be more like,
yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
I think, okay. I know. Yeah.
Yeah. That just reminded me of that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually kind of had a question about that. And I didn't write this down as a note. I just remembered kind of having this thought, but like, was Tengen trying to kill Munakata, but like didn't care, just like he was like, I'm gonna take us both down. Like, cause it seemed like that was the implication, that he was trying to kill Munakata. Maybe he thought that, you know, Munakata wasn't leading the Future Foundation well, and maybe he was endangering it. I'm not sure.
Honestly, yeah, I feel like he had to be, because if he wasn't trying to kill him, I don't know what the point was of putting himself in such a precarious situation. Like, he is an old man, and yes, he can fight and he is smart and with it, all of that, but that doesn't make you impervious to a fall, like, at that height. And so he was very knowledgeably going about that throwing them over the ledge. And so I would say yes. I don't know, he didn't seem too disappointed when he ended up in the worst spot, but
right, yeah. And he didn't seem surprised either. Like, I mean, I don't know, it was just weird.
All right, everybody, we're gonna take a quick break, but make sure you follow us on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. We're Ultra Hope Girls Podcast pretty much everywhere. And if you like what you're hearing today, leave us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. It is so helpful for the podcast and it means so much to us. And if you want bonus episodes every other week that we don't post, we have a Patreon where the lowest tier is just $2 a month and you get a bunch of awesome bonus content. Thanks y'all for listening, and we'll be right back after the break. Hello, everybody. Caroline here with a pretty exciting announcement. So I, separate from the other Ultra Hope girls, am offering some online virtual classes in things such as writing, because, you know, I'm the ultimate literary girl, and performing, and also some clubs and classes virtually via my own school, which I founded, called the Spilling Ink School. You can check that out at thespillinginkschool.com. I'm offering tutoring in college essays. I'm offering, you know, piano classes and all that jazz. So definitely check it out. It's a good time. And I will also be offering some clubs and classes that are Danganronpa related via OutSchool. So I'll keep the links all in the description. They are for people under 18, so ask your parents before checking it out. But yeah, I'm excited to potentially have some listeners in my classes, and I wanted to let you know that that's going on. So thanks so much in advance for checking it out, and I look forward to teaching some of you.
So my first note about this episode, episode 4 of the Despair Arc, is that it is called The Melancholy, Surprise, and Disappearance of Nagito Kamaeda. And I think that it should be called The Melancholy, Surprise, and Sheer Audacity of Nagito Kamaeda, because like, first thing at the top of this episode, he's walking up to the teacher and just being like, yo, teach, can you just like cancel the exam? And she's like, no. And he's like, damn, okay, well, it was worth asking though. Oh, the audacity.
Why did he think he would get an answer from that? Like, come on.
He was like, now I must resort to violence.
He woke up and chose violence too.
He did. Yeah. But I kind of get what he's saying. Like, I don't know how you would test the ultimate lucky student.
Mm-hmm. That's like, true.
Okay, Nagito, prove to us you're lucky.
Like, they all have to play Uno. All the lucky students compete in an Uno tournament.
Oh my god.
Hear me out though, didn't he kind of prove his talent at the exams?
Right, but here's the thing, Yes.
Okay, interesting point, Caroline. Yeah, going off of that.
Here's the thing, he did, and I think that was his plan. I think that he like he wanted that something like that to happen. Because it's like, yeah, that's the only way to outdo everyone else.
I was going to say, yeah, I kind of agree with that, because even I think it's Jin Kirigiri who later says, wow, like if Nagito got all of that to happen with just his luck and like in that way, like that's a power that's so great. Like we shouldn't pass that over. I'm like, man, I don't know what to say to that. Yeah, he's powerful, but like in a scary way.
Yeah, I feel like Jin Kirigiri is not a very good headmaster. He seems to make a lot of questionable choices all the time.
Hey, don't insult my dad like that.
I'm sorry.
So, Kyoko?
The only reason I would disagree with that is he never wants to do anything against the Ultimates, and his actions, the way that they went about, caused three Ultimates to get expelled. And I don't think he would ever stand for that. You know, apparently they're doing fine. They're working for the Future Foundation. They had no trouble with job security, even though they literally got expelled for a bomb threat. But I don't know. I just don't think that he would have wanted that specific course of action.
That's a good point. I also have to say, like, why did Issa Yoi for short, why did he get expelled?
Like, he was just there.
He was just hanging out. Like, he was just standing there. I don't, like.
That's such a good point.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Hashtag Yoi did nothing wrong.
I know, really.
So the real MVP of this entire episode is the dog. Love the dog.
Yes.
At first I started watching the episode, and the first camera angle after you look at the door to the classroom is thousands of posters that say wanted, alive or alive, and it's the dog. And I was like, why did I not see this the first time through? And I was thinking, I'm going to have to do a ton of research on this. Like, whose dog is this? Is this in a previous game? And then the whole episode revolves around the dog. And I was like, why did I forget this? What happened? Yeah, I think that dog should be our mascot. I would like to vote for that.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
It has
cute dog. I have another little note, just a little observation I made that I thought was cute, is that we all know and love the Nintendo Game Boy. At least if you were me, you grew up playing that thing. And Chiaki's little gamer set thing says Nintendo Game Girl.
That is cute.
I love it.
My quite literal only other note from this episode is... these second game characters sure have some poop problems. Because I couldn't help but notice that Nagato's like, hi, Seiko, I'm having some constipation. I need some assistance to get it moving.
It is very strange to me that, like, there are a lot of people in this game who have problems with their poop, but why are they going to a student for help with that?
Yeah, that's another good question.
Like, do they not have a nurse's office? they're just expected to deal with any of their problems? Like, what did they do before Seiko got to the school? I can just deal with it? I don't know.
I have no idea. Oh my gosh, like, teacher, I accidentally ate a peanut and I'm allergic. Deal with it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but Seiko isn't here, so we don't have any EpiPens.
Yeah, I know.
I have like a couple other things to say about the what looks like, you know, the dynamic between Seiko and Rurika. It seems like, to me, kind of echoing what you were saying before, Marion, about like how Rurika doesn't seem very independent. And it seems like she's relying on Seiko a lot. She's relying on Yoi a lot. And that's all well and good, but it seems like there might be a kind of dynamic of, you know, Seiko maybe feeling taken advantage of. I think there's like a quote that Ruruka says at one point where she's like, oh, you always come through for me, like you always help me whenever I need you, which kind of implied that maybe Ruruka like asks a lot of Seiko. And she's also very mad that Seiko will not eat her sweets. But I'm like, girl, Seiko has braces. She's probably not supposed to eat sweets. Also, like, maybe she has a food sensitivity. I don't know. It just seemed like a very, like, she seemed very angry about it. And it seemed like a very, like, kind of dumb thing to be angry about. Like, and also just even the situation with, like, the practical exam and the laxative getting swapped for the performance-enhancing drug. Like, Ruruka immediately assumes that Seiko set her up on purpose. There is no room in her mind to even consider whether that might have been a mistake. In reality, because, you know, it was Nagito's fault. And, you know, Seiko tries to explain that it was a misunderstanding or whatever, but, like, Ruruka doesn't give her the time of day. She doesn't give her any room for understanding or any benefit of the doubt. And, yeah, it just doesn't seem like Ruruka is a great friend.
Yeah, she literally says, did you or did you not tell me this specific drug? And I was like, no, she did not. Like,
no, she said it's on the left shelf or whatever. Like,
yeah.
I know. Also, Maddie, the whole time you were speaking, I could only think of, it was Nagito's trap. Also, I did want to say, I think this also, like, emphasizes the point of Ruruka being someone who is deeply insecure. She assumes that everyone else is out to get her. Like that, that is just, like, totally, that is what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's a question for the group. If you met, let's say you're an ultimate, well, we are all ultimates, but let's say, like, you met someone and Maddie, they hated psychology. They wanted nothing to do with it. You couldn't really talk about it to them without them, like, leaving the room, getting frustrated, whatever. Do you think you could be friends with them? Or Caroline, honestly, for you, for, like, literature,
I don't know. I kind of don't think so. Like, I feel like that would be...
Yeah, like, if they didn't respect my
passions.
At least, they don't have to, like, love it. Like, I want friends who are into a bunch of different things, but, like, if it's, like, they won't listen to me when I talk about it or when I tell them about my life and what I'm doing, that's when it's kind of, like...
Right. Because, like, yeah. Even in our, like, literary episode where we, you know, suggested books for characters, there were a lot of people where it was hard to pick one, but if they would refuse to read that book... I think that would be frustrating. And so, like, we talk about Ruruka, like, not being comfortable with Seiko not trying her sweets, but never trying it once, being, that's like, true. Vehemently opposed to engaging in her ultimate talent. I don't know. I think we got to give her a little bit more credit for that. I think it'd be a little bit insulting.
That's a really, really good point.
That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah.
My last thing is a quote from Kizakura where he says, luck is a terrifying thing. And I think that sums up this whole episode, to be honest. Like, I don't know. It was funny and there was a giant dog and there were laxatives and it was, you know, like, la la la, that's funny. But it was terrifying. Nagito's luck blew up a school. That's not funny. Like, that is scary.
Yeah. And yeah.
So I don't know. I think that Kizakura is really smart. He just comes out of nowhere sometimes with quotes that I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. So for today, for Amended Bedwet Behead, we're using the trio, Ruruka, Yoi, and Seiko. And my prompt is star alongside you in High School Musical, the musical, the show.
Well, mine is to be president of your glee club.
Oh. Marion, I'm sorry, was that star along with you in High School Musical, the musical, the show?
Right. So not High School Musical, the movie, but the High School Musical, the musical, the show.
My prompt is, which character's Twitch channel would you subscribe to?
Okay, I actually have my answers. I'm really speedy today. Okay.
You can go ahead.
All right, Twitch channel would be Seiko, because I feel like Seiko would just mix a bunch of things, make some new drugs on her Twitch channel, and I'd be like, whoa, like a new calcium channel blocker? Whoa! It'd be pretty fun to watch. Yoi would star alongside me in High School Musical, the musical, the show, because I think he's pretty cute, and I would be... I haven't seen High School Musical, the musical, the show, so I don't really know if it's still... I'm pretty sure it's kids acting in High School Musical, so he would play the Troy to my Gabriella. It would be great. And then Rurika would be the president of my glee club. She cannot do anything alone, and so she would give me a lot of solos, or at least we'd have some fun duets together, but she definitely wouldn't control the group, so that could be good.
So I would... star alongside Seiko in High School Musical, the musical, the series, for the same reason that Marin said for Yoi, except for Seiko. I like Seiko. I think she's very interesting and intriguing. So for the Twitch channel, I would pick Yoi, because I think I think that I want to watch someone who's really good at video games, and I feel like he's just really good at video games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I hear that.
Yeah, because my streams are more meme-y, where I'm like, I'm bad at video games. And it's like, that's why people come to watch. But like, I want to watch someone who's like, good at video games. So, yes. And then my pick for the Glee Club president is Rurika. Because I think that she has the Rachel Berry energy that is needed to run the head of the Glee Club. 100%. So she is my... Glee Club president, even though I was our choir president in high school, so I don't know what that says about me.
I think I would also subscribe to Yoi's Twitch channel, because he seems like he'd be an interesting guy. He's also like very aesthetically pleasing to look at, and I would watch his Twitch channels. He's attractive.
Yeah.
And another day of talking about anime characters that are attractive. I think I would perform alongside Rurika, because I think that even though like she kind of annoys me, I don't really like her. When I'm like in the performance mindset, if we're like both playing a part, like I can get into that and I can handle that. And whoever I'm with, we will vibe if we're both like doing our thing and like staying on script or whatever. I think that would go okay. And then I guess I would have Seiko be the president of whatever glee club I'm in. I don't know how that would go, but it'd be interesting. It would be a learning experience, I think, for her and for all of us. And yeah, just see how that goes.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to Ultra Hope Girls, a Danganronpa podcast. If you liked what you heard today, recommend us to a friend and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. It helps the podcast out so much, and we really, really appreciate it. We also have a Patreon for the lowest tier of just $2 a month. You can get a bunch of bonus episodes on the weeks that we do not post content on Apple and Spotify. So definitely check that out. It is a lit time. And follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. We're Ultra Hope Girls Podcast everywhere. And that's it for today, folks. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.